welcome back to Everyday Muslim. Today we'll be discussing youth challenges and opportunities. We all know that whatever that is happening today, our youths are the main challenges, they are the main focus, and of course, they are going to be our leaders for tomorrow. And that's why we have brought up this topic, and we have our guest here who will be discussing with us on the opportunities that the youths can tap from, and which Islam has also opened for them. We have here Dr. Ogunmuyiwa Sulaimon Olagoke. He's the Director and Head of Education Quality Assurance Services Unit of the Lagos Segment of Basic and Secondary Education. He has more than 25 years of experience as a licensed counselor, and he is a fellow of the Islamic Finance Professional and the Chairman Board Incorporated Trustees of First Class Muslim Foundation. I remember that First Class Muslim Foundation, yes. You're welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Alhamdulillah. Before I go on, let's look at what the topic is all about. The youths, the challenges, the opportunities. We all know that the outside world there has a lot of things in it. And sometimes, if you are not careful, they get scared. But then, there are still opportunities that they can tap from with the guidance of Islam. The kind of challenges that they have starts from navigating traditional cultural expectations to staying true to their faith in the modern world. We are going to dive into the unique experiences of these young Muslims struggling to find their space, their place in the world, and looking for inspiration to take their next step on their journey. We'll be exploring the exciting ways, and sometimes the turbulence that is always fascinating to them. Of course, it is fascinating to them because they feel that is the way. At the same time, they get confused at a point in time. Dr. Ogunmuyiwa is an educationist, and he's been in this shoe for a very long time. And I can still remember those days of active MSSN. The things that he taught us then, it still lingers in most of us, in our brains. I will also be relating this to Surah Al-Kahf, verse 13, which says, "We relate to you their story in truth. Surely they were youths who truly believed in their Lord, and we increase them in guidance." This verse speaks to the importance of belief and guidance for young people, and the role that Allah plays in helping them grow in their faith and in their lives. This verse, of course, can be interpreted in many ways, but the major thing here I would like to highlight is the importance of guidance and the moral uprightness for all young Muslims. With this, Dr. Ogunmuyiwa, I would like to start. Young people stand as the foundational force and key drivers of change in any society. About 70% of the Nigerian population is under 30 years. These young people drive change, but did not occupy the driver's seat. What roles does Islam assign to the youth in nation building and national development?
Thank you so very much. I want to thank MPAC and the Women FM for collaborating to bring up this topic this morning. I think there is no better time for us to discuss this. When you talk about youths in any community, they stand as the pillar of development for their community. And it is not only in Islam, but in every other community. However, when we talk about Islam, we are talking about youths who are Muslims. And when you talk about nation building, it means those who are going to actually build the nation to the way that is going to be very, very paramount in the life of every one of them. Therefore, I want to look at the definition of a youth from the perspective of the Nigeria 2009 National Youth Policy, which says that a youth is somebody that is within the age of 18 and 35. And like you said, the youth are they constitute the majority of the people in the country. The situation in our country has reflected the fact that the youth are not given their place in nation building because they are actually distracted with so many things. However, in Islam, it is very clear that youths are given so many roles to play. And we can see from the seerah of the Prophet that even the first categories of people that that accepted Islam and played prominent role at that point in time were youths. Everyone will remember the story of Ali ibn Abi Talib, who was just 10 years old when he defended the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and we can see the role that he played in the development of Islam. Abdullah ibn Umar was just 13, and anyone that knows anything about him in terms of knowledge and contribution will realize that he played a very, very important role. I can go on and on. Jabir ibn Abdullah, Zayd ibn Harith, they were 15. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, Abba ibn Harad, Zubayr ibn Hawam were 16. And more importantly, I want to make a particular reference to the time of Imam Buhari, who wrote the hadith book of Al-Bukhari.
Okay.
Imam Buhari was just 16 years old when he started the compilation of that Sahih, that book. And that book, it's on record, scholars have agreed, that after the Quran, the most authentic book that we every Muslim can rely on is Sahih Bukhari.
Mm-hmm.
And he started the compilation of that book at age 16 and completed it at age 32.
Wow.
And we can see the role that book is playing when it comes to people understanding their deen and getting references from the point that are very genuine. There is no single hadith in the whole of Buhari that anyone can say that it is not genuine. So the youths in Islam have a lot of roles to play, and I think history has been able to establish this.
Well, the main point I picked there is the duration of time that Buhari was able to compile that hadith from the age of 16 to 32 years.
So 16 years.
16 years, 32 years, and he finished by the age of 32. That's 16 years difference. Why the rush? So definitely, if our youth to start that today, they should not rush and take their time to get something that is good. Everybody loves Sahih Buhari. Doctor, there are a number of questions associated with young Nigerians lately, most especially concerning desperation of wealth and material acquisition by all means. Some young people engage in fraudulent schemes, including what is called Yahoo Yahoo. What that means, I don't really know. I just know that it is called Yahoo Yahoo. Or even money rituals. What are the primary challenges that young Muslims face in maintaining moral and spiritual uprightness in today's world?
Yeah, I think we have a very big problem on our hands as a nation or as a world, because there has been a great change in our values. Right now, it saddens everyone that the rate at which our youth wants to amass wealth is very serious. And that is why we have different references to those who are into rituals, who are into different kinds of money making. And I think it is the fault of the earlier generations, the government and the elders who are supposed to regulate what the youths are doing. I think we have paid excessive premium on entertainment over academic values and other societal values. It will amaze you, somebody sent something to me some years back. I was able to still go back to that message, and he was just trying to compare to me that look at what Nigeria has turned to. When there's a particular Project Fame program that somebody will be giving 7.5 million an SUV. We also have Nigerian Idol, will be giving 5 million. You have Niger Singh, 5 million with SUV. You have the Ultimate Search, 10 million with SUV. You have the Dance Hall, 10 million with SUV. And when you now come to Cowbell Mathematics, the winner is giving 100,000. When you come to Spelling Bee, you are giving 50,000 naira. When it comes to School Scrabble, you are giving 25,000 naira. In fact, there was one spelling game, and all you were giving was just a bag of maybe Indomie and drinks you were giving to the winner. So what are we trying to tell our youths? What we are telling our youth is that, you know, look for other ways to get money. In fact, there was one particular advert that caught my attention. You sleep as a poor man, and you just send a message before you sleep, and you wake up in the morning and you become a millionaire. I don't think this is the way wealth comes. You are supposed to work over time. You are supposed to engage in business over time before you acquire wealth. But the impression we are giving to the youth today is just that there's something you can do. All of a sudden, you become a millionaire. And now, everybody seems to be comfortable. Parents of children who are into Yahoo are comfortable. Even the government is silent over it. I had an experience where a policeman caught some Yahoo boys with different phones, you know, hidden in their cars. And my car had a fault at that junction, so I waited there. So they went away. I thought they were going to the police station, only for them to come back with a bottle of water and a
toothpick.
Wow. In their mouth. And the guys came back to drop them, and they went away. And it amazes me. If you see someone that has worked for money, you will see that person being prudent, looking responsible. But those who make money in different ways even appear like the way I've made money, I know it's not clean. And I still appear that way. Police will see them. Nobody will do any investigation. And these things are very simple. I think the community has encouraged people to engage in different kinds of money rituals to get money. We have stopped asking questions, where did you get your money? These are questions that parents will ask. Where did you get this clothes from? But nobody is asking questions now. Even in the community, you see people who get rich overnight and we keep quiet. And people have to copy one another. If one youth can do it and nobody is saying anything, then another person can do it, another person can do it. And I think that is the reason we have the trend now. We have lost our, you know, societal values.
That is say that the youths have misdirected their energies towards misguided priorities.
Absolutely.
They've lost their priorities. Okay, going further, what factors do you think would have been most influential in shaping the behavior and thoughts of the youth in today's world?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is, you know, the elders have not shown enough responsibility. A lot of youths get disenchanted when they look at the age of the country and they say we are not making progress, we are not developing, nothing is getting better, and then they blame the elders for this. So they want to deviate from what the elders are doing and they want to find the shortcuts. Secondly is, we have lost the spirit of mentorship. Nobody is mentoring again, even in secondary school, even in the university. You know, people now find mentors, you know, among those who are doing money rituals and they want to follow suit. And more importantly, the internet and social media has exposed our youth to very dangerous trends. It's not only about money rituals, they are exposed to pornography, they are exposed to betting. I counseled a child recently and I was really shocked. A Muslim youth who, you know, by all standard, knows the Quran, knows so many things, prays very well, but anytime he holds the phone, he has some apps there which are betting app. He will bet, you know, and surprisingly, there are other apps too that are called loan apps attached to the betting apps. So when you don't have money, you can use your NIN to borrow money from there. Sincerely, I got to know this not quite 6 months, and it was shocking, very shocking to me. The system is such that people are building apps to encourage immorality. I don't know how come betting has become so rampant in our community, and people are even giving loans. So a lot of people are indebted, not because they got money to do business, but because they were betting, and it is just foolishness. When you bet, you should know when 1 million people bet, maybe only 2% of them will win. The other 98% are going to lose. So you are only saying that you want to be among the 2%. So for how long will you continue to bet to be among the 2% that will win? It's just mere foolishness. So I think the internet has had great influence on our youths, and right before our nose, right under our roof, they are doing things that we can never imagine that they could be doing.
I would like to pick it from the mentorship part. I remember in those days that some organizations go to secondary schools to talk to them, and these students look up to those people that they want to be like them because they have a lot of organizations. But recently, the private school that I went to, and I asked them, okay, do you have people that come over to talk to your kids? They said no, that they just invite them once in a while if they feel that the kids need them. I'm now thinking, why has that dropped? Why did that thing drop from going to schools to talk to them, writing letters to schools to talk to these kids so that they can pick up mentorship from there, than just the school taking it up themselves? Then I know they used to go to schools, but now it is the school that will write letters, and that is if they want to bring people to come to school. What can you say about that?
Yes, I must share my personal experience too. While I was in the university, I had secondary schools around Oshodi that I visit because that's where I grew up. I go there, I talk to students, even on the assembly, I go to their meetings, I talk to them. The principals were more open, you know, were more receptive. But I think nowadays, principals are, you know, major challenges facing some of these organizations that go to school. Anyway, they're trying to put some other caution, because when the issue of Boko Haram and so many other things started, they had to start curtailing the number of people that comes to school. I also remember when I was a PA to a permanent secretary, Lagos State Government in the school started a program of mentoring where permanent secretaries would be given topics to go to secondary schools, you know, around them. They will draw the roster from Alausa. Permanent secretaries in Alausa will go to schools. And I think there is no better program than this. Where you have directors, you have permanent secretaries going to secondary schools, talking to students. These students are motivated with what they see. So when they see prominent people, I mean, in fact, in the community too, somebody works with Chevron, works with MTN, works with Glo, any big company, you go to school, spend 10-15 minutes with the students. In fact, you cannot imagine the impact it will have in their lives. Some of them will just say, I want to grow up and become this man. But alas, what do they see? They see a lot of people in their communities. They pick, you know, entertainers, they pick sport people, they pick, you know, riff-raff in the community who just jam money from, you know, through Yahoo or any other thing. They pick those ones as mentors. And from there, you see them going the other way. I think we need to be more organized with our mentoring programs. Every organization should have this. There's a Yoruba adage that says that Ojumeji don't be more in Baoju don't talk. Yeah, this means that even if it is just two people that will bring a child to life, we need 200 other people to help train. So part of the 200 people are those who are in government, are those who are in schools, are those who are in organizations, are those who are in the community, and that is the way we can really, really bring about a change. Let me give this final example before you move on to another question. When I gained admission to the University of Lagos, my year one, I wasn't going to the mosque. I was not associating with the Muslim students. Not until a day, I just went to the mosque to pray Juma, and I saw one woman I will never forget in my life, Alaja Olapade. She worked with the computer center then. She saw me and said, "Ah, are you Sulaiman?" I said, "Yes." "You are the son of the former Amira in Lagos State." He said, "Ah, not your humanity, Wanji. Remember the son of who you are. You see here, nobody will tell you to come to mosque. Nobody is going to drive you to class. Nobody is going to say go for lectures. You are free to do whatever you want to do, but always remember the son of whom you are." And I think that was a turning point in my life. If I have not met that woman, only God knows, I wouldn't have been going to the mosque. I would have been going for shows and parties, and that would have just been my lot. But just one person talking to a youth, encouraging a youth, will go a long way, because we really don't know what that youth is looking for at that point in time. And I always pray that, you know, Allah should make us to be positive impact in the life of this youth. So take it as an opportunity to talk to any youth, to motivate them positively, and then we cannot be a better nation if we do this.
Yeah. That's why I tell people that every child is unique. What they need is that unique touch that will give them the better life.
Yeah.
If you are just joining us, you are on to Everyday Muslim on WFM 91.7 FM. And our topic of discussion today is youth in Islam, opportunities and challenges. Our phone lines are now open for calls, 07000-917-917. 07000-917-917. And feel free to use the message or WhatsApp, 070-317-56537. 070-317-56537. Just Lemon, from where you stop, the reality, I would say a reality show for you, I would like to shed more light on the community parenting of our youth today, because I know what I see is that my child to myself, your child to yourself, how does it affect our children, the youths of today?
Yeah, it affects them greatly, because it is not possible for you as a parent to be everywhere with your child. You only be with your child for a few minutes. It is other people that will be with your child, and they are the ones who will see. So, excuse me, the kind of spirit that we have now is that others don't want, a parent does not want other people to contribute in the development of their child. I think we are missing the point. Community parenting, even from that Yoruba adage, is saying that a single parent cannot successfully train a child. It means that we have to collaborate with so many other people. I read one particular hadith where the Prophet ﷺ said that he wants your child to be successful. And he gave us four conditions. He said the first condition is the father must be a righteous man. If you want your child to be successful, then you have to be a righteous man. Then the mother too must be a righteous person. Do the basics. Make sure you pray your salat. Make sure you do good things. Make sure you do the fundamentals. That's all. Now, when you do this, then he said you must have a sympathetic teacher. Now, can you imagine the moment you start school from either KG or from nursery, you start interacting with teachers. From KG, you are with a teacher. That teacher has a role to play in your life. You move to nursery, you move to primary, you move to secondary, you meet teachers all your life. You go to the university, you meet teachers. It is only when you leave the university that you stop meeting classroom teachers. And when we move on and on, and as a parent, you need to get in touch with the teachers of your child to get feedback. Now, the community too. Let me tell you a story that happened to one particular family. Very, very good parents, but they are working parents, you know. They drop their child in school, a female child, and they go at the gate of the school. And do you know that somebody else that stays in Lekki will send an Uber driver to go and pick the girl at the gate of the school, barely 5 minutes, she was dropped, and they take her to Lekki. This girl was just in SS3. And by the time that the school will be closing, the same, another Uber driver will come back and drop the girl at the gate of the school. And this was on and on and on and on for some time. The question is, do you think somebody in that community did not see her? They did, but they kept quiet until something else happened. And do you know that this particular girl, you know, had to lose her life?
Yes, subhanAllah.
You know, because of things like this. So, as people in the community, we have to say something. And this is what, when the issue of abuse started in school, we started doing this kind of poster, see something, say something. It is not only meant for school. Yes. It's also meant for the community. You see something about my child, please say something about it. If I say something about another child, I say something about it. And when we do this, then the children will realize that everybody is my parent. Yes. Everybody is looking at me. And whatever I do will definitely get to my parents. And I think this is actually the way to go. We have to, you know, eschew this individualism system that has been introduced to us and we have accepted. Let us come back to our communal, you know, system, our communal values, and help train our children together. Because when you simply train your child to be successful, the one that we have neglected, who have become hoodlums, will not make your child to live successful.
Very true. Yeah, earlier on you spoke about the social media. Taking us to technology now. Technology serves as a highly beneficial tool, fostering substantial global development and means for growth and innovation. However, when utilized inappropriately, just as you said earlier on, it has the potential to nourish the very foundations of evils, promote its growth, and untimely render it an accessible commodity. What are the gains, opportunities, and threats offered by technology and the modern multimedia platforms for the youth?
The world today, as it stands, is greatly indebted to technology, because if not for technology, I don't think we'll be where we are. I did a presentation recently, and I had the opportunity of seeing the microphone that was used in 1875. Okay, so you can't compare that to what we are using now. It is technology development that has brought about this. So the internet, the social media, has really brought about connectivity and communication. It has made it very, very easy. I remember those days of pen pals, where you have to write a letter to your pen pal, either in the UK, it would take about 2 months for the letter to get there, and for you to get back the reply, it take another 2 months. But now, on our phone, one tap, I can send a message to a friend in the UK. He will say it immediately and respond back to me. So connectivity, global friendship, communication has been made very easy. Again, it has made youth to be very expressive and very creative. You know, self-expression, there are people who, when they see you, they cannot talk. But when they pick their phone, they can send all the messages they want to send. they can send it to you. Even our children, at times, just say that, they don't worry, I'll send the message to you. Because they don't want to talk to you about it, they can easily send the message, and you get it. And a lot of creativity. And I think this is one of the things that has opened the world to being creative. And I tell Muslim scholars, I said, the level at which technology and creativity is going, we have to be involved. Coming to this station, I only need to open my phone, put it on my palm, and type there. This is where I'm going. And Google will tell me, you go this way, you get to where you are going in 40 minutes. I remember the old scholars have told us from, you know, exegesis of the Quran, that you cannot know what is going to happen to next minute. Now Google is telling me what's going to happen next minute. So where do you place that? It is because some people have done the research. And if Muslims are not involved, I'm sure we are going to find ourselves behind. So the technology is even changing the face of fatwa that people have already. A lot of information and awareness are going on, a lot of educational resources, even for adults. I don't see any subject matter that I want to discuss. The moment I go, I'll get something on the internet. However, there are so many risks that are involved. Cyberbullying and harassment. People don't have, they expose their private concerns. You know, you buy a car today, you put it on the internet, I just bought a car, thank God for me. My family is traveling, you go on the internet and post it there. I just bought a new clothes, you post it there. You don't have any secret. And those who want to carry out evils, this is where they get details, detailed information about any individual. And this is a risk. We also have mental health issues. I recently counseled a lady who was going into depression. And what is the source? Social media. She posted something on Facebook. She was expecting about 500 likes and got only about 10. And she was started wondering, the picture I posted, does it mean I'm not more beautiful? Does it mean I'm not this? And just because she has put her happiness, confirmation, verification of her beauty, confirmation of her beauty in the hands of other people, and since they are not responding, she starts getting depressed. And I think this is something very, very, very serious. So there are a lot of mental health, issues going around, the issue of social media, especially for our children. And more importantly is this addiction and distraction. They are so addicted to it. If you tell them, put your phone down for 30 minutes, they can't do it. It is like something is amiss.
It's biting them.
Yeah, something is biting them. Something is wrong somewhere. And, this issue of delayed gratification is no more there. They want everything instantly. Friends can start fighting because I sent you a message in the morning. You didn't check it until afternoon. It means I'm not important in your life. It means something else is... And these are non-issues. These are non-issues. You can send me a message and I don't have time to check it until the following day. So, delayed gratification is no more there. And, people use the social media to pass fake news. People have lost their lives. People have become maimed. People have become, they have done very wrong things, taking wrong steps because of the misinformation that they get from the social media. And there are things that we can do to really help solve this kind of problems.
Thank you. We have a comment here from one of our listeners. Governments are policymakers. In Nigeria, we like to copy the Europeans, not minding our culture and our morals. Government should localize policies from the West and celebrate academic excellence. I think the person is trying to collaborate with what you said earlier on.
Yes, I can't but agree with what the comment. Government need to concentrate and shift away from embracing entertainment all the way. We need to really reward those who are in academics, because it is those who are in academics that are those who are in technology. They are those who are in corporate world bringing about development, and I think they need to shift attention and do a lot on this.
Okay. With that, sticking to this question, what would you suggest as the measures to ensure that technology remains a force for good, contributing to the well-being and development of Muslim youths at home and in society?
Yeah, the first thing we need to do is to, imbibe digital literacy education all around us. In schools, in the curriculum, we have to, every educational institution should incorporate digital literacy and online safety into their curriculum. Young people need to develop critical skills to be able to evaluate online content and be able to understand what is right or what is wrong. Secondly, is that parental guidance is really, really important. When you give a phone to your child, please try to monitor, try to follow up, try to guide them on what they are doing. Put some parental control, and there must be communication. Don't just give them the phone and not discuss with them about the things that are happening around them. What are they browsing? What are they doing on the phone? What games are they playing? What football are they? try to be involved so that you can see the red lines there. Then there should be private setting and security on, you know, everything. When you have a big company, I know there are companies when they install internet, they put some security in check. There are some browsers that will not go, or there are some website that you cannot download from. And those checks should be put there. And even at home. And we should also ensure that we have a system, we put in place a system where we can always report. Just yesterday, somebody just sent me a message. One of my daughter friend's line was hacked. Sent a message to me that can you help me send $100,000 to a particular person? I will refund you back. I mean, so many people have been saying, let's try to report it. But the line of how do you report such things? This is something that everybody should know. And the steps should just be 1, 2, you have sent the report. And anybody doing this, you can get the line. The guy put an account number there. We can trace the account number. We can trace the guy's number. And they should make arrests. They should prosecute people who are doing this. If you don't have a clear line of reporting and you don't prosecute people will keep doing this. And sincerely, a lot of people have lost their hard-earned money to this kind of a thing. Yeah. And you see the guys blocking the streets, throwing parties, taking all kinds of alcohol, celebrating their wins. Other people sweat at their own wins. And we stay in this community and we allow this to continue. I think we should also share case studies of those who engage in internet fraud, have been arrested, publicize their stories. And those who have used the internet positively, we should also publicize them. I think if we do some of these things, it's really going to help us to curtail the risk and dangers from social media.
Okay. A lot of our youths do complain of boredom, yet the community suffers a massive amount of manpower shortage for crucial services, be it in the mosque, in Muslim student societies, in our Muslim professional organizations, etc. How can we groom our youth to embrace the culture of volunteering? And they will not think about money.
So that's a way to get out of boredom. The truth of the matter is, every minute counts in the life of a man. The Prophet said you are going to account for every day of your life. In fact, he said specifically that on the day of judgment, that some people will be asked questions. For everybody will be asked questions. And one of the questions you'll be asked is, how did you spend your youthful age, your youth period? And since you know you are going to account for it, you have to make the best use of it. And I want to seriously tell our youth that youth period is the period that they can acquire everything that they want to acquire, that is going to be useful for them in the future. I learned public speaking when I was, in the university. I learned research when I was in the university. I learned so many skills when I was in university. In fact, most of the literature's books that I read, it was when I was in the university that I read them. I hardly read now. But I tell you, there is no subject matter that I will not have an idea of something about it. So volunteerism is one of the ways to make use of your time and acquire a lot of things and build your profile. And I know if it was that popular when we were growing up, I'm sure I would have done a lot in this area. So, volunteer your time for the community. Volunteer your time for organizations. Now, you volunteer your time, you are learning skills. You are learning, about things. And you are making positive contribution to developmental, programs. And so, I think that we need to create this opportunity in abundance. If everybody is training up programs and asking for volunteers, I think the youth, from what I have experienced, are really, really interested in volunteering their time to acquire new skills. So organizations should structure this in their activities. As the chairman of S Class Muslim Foundation, we had an event recently, and for the first time, we threw out a call for volunteers, and a lot of people volunteered. We had to even select out of, we were looking for maybe about 5 people to volunteer. Eventually, we got 14.
Wow.
And these were wonderful youths who volunteered for the program, and it was the best program that we have ever organized, since 2017. So I can confirm to you that volunteerism is a way to go for the youths. They are going to acquire a lot of knowledge. They are going to acquire experience. It's not going to be like, oh, you just graduated, you don't have experience. No. Before you graduate from the university, volunteerism has opened the door for you to acquire experience and get necessary, exposure, so that you can add to your profile.
Now you have said it, that the youth, with your own experience, they are ready to volunteer. Now it's left for the community to equip them
and engage them.
Give them the opportunity, not looking for someone that already knows about it. They should give the youth opportunity to also show themselves and give them that confidence that they can do it. Thank you. I tell people that the teenage world is the most interesting time of our life, but at the same time, the most delicate of our time. Growing up, young teenagers experience new internal and external struggles that can be emotionally overwhelming. This can sometimes lead to stress, pressure, in some extreme cases, depression. How best do you think the community can help our young population cope with pressure and stress? In fact, some people have said now, when you talk to them, they say, I'm depressed. That's the new language, I'm depressed. I don't know if it's depression, pressure, or stress.
It's all. It's difficult, except you go for, you say psychologists will be able to now help you to differentiate whether what you are going through is just stress, or whether it is just pressure, or you are actually moving into depression. I think the first thing is everybody needs to be educated about how do we even recognize stress.
Mm-hmm.
Because before you go into depression, definitely you will have gone through some symptoms of stress.
Mm.
These symptoms are also very similar. So how do we recognize when a child is stressed up? Number one is you start to see some irritable, behavior and anger. When somebody gets easily irritated and gets easily, angered, and this person doesn't do like this before. When you start noticing a change in somebody's behavior, when somebody has trouble sleeping, you're on the bed, you can't sleep, you're just turning here and there, you wake up in the morning, you don't look rested. When, a youth starts neglecting responsibility, you are supposed to do A, B, C, D, but you are not doing it. Why are you not doing it? You can't explain. Because you are stressed. And when your eating pattern changes, things you love to eat before, you are not eating again. Things you are not supposed to eat are things you are not eating. Or you totally lose appetite. I just don't feel like eating. That child is going through stress. And when they now, fall sick often, These are people who do not really fall sick, but they now realize that he or she is getting sick often and often, then I think there are some signs of being stressed, or maybe depression is setting in. So what do we need to do, or what do they need to do? They need to sleep more. They need to sleep well. There's a minimum number of hours you are supposed to sleep. Experts have recommended that 9 to 12 hours of sleep in the night is ideal for a 6-year-old to 12-year-old. Then a teenager needs to 8 to 10 hours of sleep. Sleep needs to be the priority to check stress. Like I was sharing my experience with you this morning, yesterday was a bit stressful for me. So after I woke up at 5 to pray, I went back to sleep. I didn't get off the bed until 9:30. Even though my plan was to get off at 8, so I can prepare and start coming to the station. But I couldn't, and I needed to just relax and sleep. You know, God forbid, when you don't have enough sleep, you can just, slump, and that will just be the end of it. Another thing we need to do is exercise. You know, I know youths would love to do sports, but it is not like when you go out to National Stadium or you go to this thing and then you want to go and do sport and we are. No, every day, try to do some exercises within the ambit of your home. You know, I'm not constant at doing it, but I try to take a walk. I walk around my building about 10, 15 times, you know, daily. And I do that. I do some exercises just for you to be able to keep fit. And when you experience this, please speak out. When you feel that you are not feeling too good, speak out. That is very, very important. You know, talk to somebody. This is the way I'm feeling, and I think I need to. Then we need to balance the work and play. You have to plan your day every time. Make sure you know you have your to-do list. And what you feel you cannot do, you can shift to another time. Allow people to do some things for you.
Mm.
So that you don't overstress, you know, yourself. And anytime you feel that you are not feeling too good, take a deep breath in and out.
Mm.
It's going to relieve you of stress. But if it is anything that has to do with depression, you are feeling depressed, please try and see a psychologist before it gets out of hand.
Thank you. We have a question here. Parents said, my parents said I can't use an Android phone until I get to university. When is the appropriate age for me to use a phone? I am 16.
Oh, okay. Well, this is dependent on individuals. I must tell you that questions like that need some other forms of tracking. It depends on what a child is exposed to. Now, the research has not given us a particular time to say it is at this age that you expose a child to the use of phone. There are some schools that it is important for a child to have a phone, but the phone is controlled.
Okay.
Yeah, the phone is controlled. You have a phone truly, but there are some things you cannot download on the phone. The phone is just meant for a particular function. So the question I would like to ask the questioner is, why do you want to use the Android phone? For what?
Mm.
You understand? When my child is in a boarding school, when he comes home, he wants to use his phone, and I tell you, the only thing you can have on that phone is maybe WhatsApp. And when you do WhatsApp, at any point in time, I can always check. No, he will tell me it's my privacy. I say, I know it's your privacy, but you are still under me. And I have a right to also look through whatever you are doing. So, ideally, I would belong to the school of thought that says that a child cannot permanently have a phone until they get, when they finish secondary school.
Hmm.
So that they avoid all this kind of distractions.
Okay.
That may come intermittently during the SS2, SS3, SS1. They can have access to phone and make sure that it is just for a lot of educational purposes, WhatsApp to chat with friends, but don't let them get exposed to Facebook and all these things. I don't think they really need it at this time. My personal opinion anyway.
Okay. Thank you very much. Before we leave, one question. In the face of pressures from all sides, societal, social, psychological, peer, how easy is it for young people to navigate the difficult terrain of growing into adulthood and remaining steadfast on the principal values of obedience and submission to Allah?
Well, this is very, very important. And I must say that youths must constantly uphold their faith as Muslims and become steadfast. I assure them that whatever they do, Allah will always come to their rescue.
Hmm.
Allah has said, إِلَّا الَّذِينَ قَالُوا رَبُّنَ اللَّهِ ثُمَّ اسْتَقَامُوا تَتَنَزَّلُ عَلَيْهِ الْمَلَائِكَ أَلَّا تَخَافُوا وَلَا تَحَزَّنُوا. Said, in the case of those who say Allah is our Lord and they remain steadfast, Allah will make angels to descend over them And the angels will be telling them, do not fear, do not grieve, but receive the glad tidings of paradise. And he said, Nuzulan min Ghafuru Rahim. This is the list of favors that we can do for you. In another verse, he has said, Wama yetekila yeji Allahu wa kharaja. That if you believe in Allah and you are steadfast, Allah will create ways for you, will create solutions for you in every difficult situation that you find yourself. And I want Muslim youth to understand that they need faith and steadfastness. Secondly, they need to continue to seek knowledge at all times. Seek knowledge, beneficial knowledge, Islamic knowledge, know about your deen. And also try to know, somebody said, know something about everything and know everything about something. So it means that you have an idea of so many things and you try to build yourself and become a master of a particular one. Choose the right mentors. I hate to refer to this, but you can count the number of people that have lost their life, the number of talented young people that this country has lost to bad mentors. So be careful who you choose as your mentor. When you choose the right mentor, they will guide you through. Again, as you are choosing mentors, also be careful when you are choosing friends. When you choose the wrong friends, you are going the wrong way. When you choose the right friend, they will always be there for you. And I think it is on this note that I will end to say that, you know, on the day of judgment, friends will come in the aid of friends. Now, bad friends, if bad friend died, and when he died, he saw the punishment, and I said, oh God, please, I still have my friend living. We both do evil things. Don't let him change you. Let him continue to engage in this evil until he also dies on the evil. And we all of us will enter hellfire together. But if he's a good friend, that good friend will say, oh Allah, I have a friend on heart. We are both doing good. Please, don't change him. Let him be steadfast in this goodness so that we'll be together in paradise. It is important that youths choose their friends carefully.
Jazakallah khairan. Thank you very much, Dr. Sulaiman Ogumoyiwa Olagoke. It was nice really talking to you, and I'm sure that our listeners and our youth especially have learned one or two things from you. My credit goes to MPAC and WFM for this wonderful program. Special thanks to our engineer Ilari and our producer Aisha. Before I give the closing remark, I would like to say that I know that lots of youths and teenagers, you have heard about the story of Yusuf. It's something that you have to go back to, read about into the Quran. I remember that the story teaches us about patience, trust in God, the forgiveness and perseverance of Yusuf. Despite all the challenges, Yusuf, Prophet Yusuf stood and faced Almighty Allah. With this, until I come your way again next week, same time, same station, I am Rashida Adetunwoke Olaniyan, saying my salam and enjoy the rest of your weekend with this nasheed. Be happy.